Throughout the summer of 2004, the International Solidarity Movement brought together Palestinians, Israelis, and internationals on the ground in the occupied territories for the Freedom Summer Campaign. The campaign focused on building nonviolent civil resistance to confront the daily workings of the Israeli occupation. Freedom Summer 2004 focused on the internationally condemned Israeli security fence, or to what is now commonly referred to as the apartheid wall. The international solidarity movement includes the participation from activists throughout the world, including Montreal. I had the opportunity to interview Eileen Young, a Montrealer who traveled from the West Island to the West Bank to participate in the Freedom Summer campaign. Eileen is a longtime social justice activist. She lives in St. Anne de Bellevue and is an artist. In June 2004, she traveled to Palestine with a group of older women who were all volunteers with the ISM's Freedom Summer Campaign 2004.
My name is Eileen Young, and I'm a 60-year-old woman who lives on the West Island. And I recently went on a trip to Palestine and worked with the International Solidarity Movement over there. The International Solidarity Movement organizes internationals to come to Palestine to support them in their struggle. And they basically are a nonviolent group. I actually went with a group of women from the United States, mainly from New York City, who had organized a group of older women. It was called Women of a Certain Age, but they were going to be affiliated with the ISM. The reason that I wanted to do this was that I have been involved in social justice work for quite a few years, more particularly since September 11th, 2001. And in participating in the various organizations and demonstrations that happened after that event, I got to know some people who had been to Palestine with the International Solidarity Movement and had always thought I would like to go. However, I felt that my age and I have a slight disability, I need to walk with a cane quite often. I just thought I was too old, basically. And so when Jaggi Singh forwarded an email to me from Gail Miller, who lives in New York City, who was organizing a group of women of a certain age, I decided that that was my opportunity.
Well, maybe talk about that idea. I mean, what were some of the conversations you had with people in your group, women of a certain age? What were the main reasons they felt it was important to participate in the work of the International Solidarity Movement?
Okay, well, these women, there were one or two of them who had previously worked with the International Solidarity Movement, so they'd been involved for some time. And they were, in general, activists who have been involved in struggles against the occupation of Iraq as well and so on. So they already were a special group of women. A lot of them are Jewish women. The sort of main group in New York were Jewish women. And in their mission statement, they did say that they wanted to support and stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people, and that the fact that they were Jewish and that they were seeing this injustice visited on people similar to what Jews had experienced during World War II and at other times in history made them feel all the more strongly about it. Yeah. So they wanted to be over there and participate.
Maybe talk about why you feel the work of the International Solidarity Movement is important or crucial, and how did you see that play out on the ground? Maybe talk about a couple stories about how you saw that intervention of internationals, you know, putting themselves on the line, playing a significant role or an important role in what was taking place in Palestine.
I felt the work of the ISM was extremely important. I mean, partly just because the kind of media coverage that you see in mainstream media about Palestine is so scarce and so biased when you do see it. And I felt it that the presence of internationals in Palestine is very important, number one, in order to be able to witness what is going on and be able to come back and tell people about it. And then my understanding was, and this is certainly how I saw it when I was there, that internationals can play a role, a protective role in demonstrations or in any kind of actions, like where roadblocks need to be removed, or even just helping Palestinians get through checkpoints, that the presence of internationals is going to change somewhat how the Israeli soldiers or functionaries will respond. They're less likely to shoot internationals, although they have shot, or they certainly killed Rachel Corrie, but it's less likely to happen. The first demonstration I was on when I was in Palestine was at Aram, and that's a suburb in the northern part of Jerusalem, I believe. And that was a very violent demonstration. The soldiers started tear gassing minutes into the march. It was just incredible. And I remember that I was walking beside this marching band, this musical band of kids in white uniforms, kids and teenagers, and all of a sudden, you know, people in the front of this demonstration were turning back, which said to me that that means tear gas. And sure enough, we all got quite badly tear gassed and retreated. And I never saw what happened to the kids in the band, but we took refuge in this building where there was an emergency medical center. So they were constantly coming in with stretchers, with wounded Palestinian young men on these stretchers. It was really quite horrifying. So gradually our group went back outside, you know, to see how they could deal with the tear gas and so on. They were still shooting plastic bullets, so I didn't go out right away because I was worried about my hip that could get badly injured. But later on, we all started out down the street towards where the soldiers still were. And as I understood it, that was a show of strength on the part of internationals and some Israeli activists that were there to march down the street in front of the Palestinians, and that would prevent the soldiers from continuing their assault. But then shortly after that, they arrested several people, some Israelis and three or four Palestinians, and they left, right? And at that point, the shopkeepers kind of opened up their shops again, and it was kind of a very festive feeling in the street. And if we went into a shop, like to buy water or something, they'd tell us it was no charge, and they were thanking us for being there. So that was pretty clear, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I was in Bidu, this small village, I was in Bidu for several days. And one of the days that I was there was the day that the Supreme Court made the decision that the wall had to be modified. And that particularly affected the people in Bidu. There again, people, you know, stopped their cars as they passed me in the street, or they'd come up to me in a restaurant or whatever, and they'd thank all of us internationals for having come. So it definitely seemed to make a big difference to them.
One of the main focuses this summer of the ISM was to build resistance to the wall. Why was the focus the wall? I mean, now we're seeing it. It's making headlines around the world.
Well, the building of the wall is, like, my understanding of it is that it will turn, or has turned, or is turning Palestine into an apartheid state like South Africa was, where they had Bantustans, right? Because this wall does not simply separate Israel from Palestine or from the occupied territories. It cuts into the occupied territories quite significantly. So the whole idea that Israelis have put forth, that they need this wall for security to stop suicide bombing attacks and so on, doesn't make any sense, because where they're building it in certain places, they are leaving the Palestinians on the same side. And what it appears to be more about is the land and the water sources. I did not go into the north part of the occupied territories when I was there, but my understanding is that there are villages and towns in the north part that are almost completely walled off. So there had already been checkpoints and roadblocks and various things that really impede the movement of Palestinians. In order to get to your place of work or in order to get to school or to university or anything, it can take sometimes even days to travel because there are so many checkpoints and roadblocks. And I think there are places where Palestinians are just not even allowed to go. They can't be assured that just because they're living in the occupied territories that they can go anywhere in those occupied territories. And if they try, it's very difficult already because of all these other things. But the wall is really being used to reinforce this isolation and division of the people.
Now, in terms of the whole history of, you know, the Palestinian struggle, how do you see the wall as having an impact in terms of people's perception of what is actually taking place? I mean, it seems to be, at least today, that the wall has had a huge impact in terms of the way people envision what's taking place, because it's such a symbol.
I hope so. I certainly hope so. I mean, the decision of the International Court in Hague that the wall is illegal, I think that's very important and will affect a lot of people. And definitely seeing the wall, I mean, it's this enormous, it's like the kind of walls you have along expressways going through cities, except that it's about 3 or 4 times as high and not made to look pretty, just this ugly concrete barrier, very, very high, and sort of completely divides you from whatever, you know, was there before. I certainly hope that the building of the wall makes it a little more clear that there are important issues that need to be discussed, and that people in the rest of the world cannot turn their backs on what's going on in Palestine.
Now, being back here, what do you say to somebody in 5-10 minutes to try and explain really concretely what's taking place? You talked about apartheid, you know, you talk about complete separation.
I did have one discussion with somebody where he had the kind of attitude that there is wrong on both sides, that if Palestinians are going to suicide bomb and so on and so forth, you can't blame the Israelis for what they're doing and so on. And he definitely had a perception of Palestinian people as being totally dominated by a feeling of revenge and vengefulness and so on. And, I mean, there's certainly no reason why they shouldn't feel that way, considering the way that they have to live their lives. But, you know, when I did explain to him the kind of daily hassles, just passing through the checkpoint between Ramallah and Jerusalem, I mean, I did it maybe 6-7 times while I was there. And the last time I was coming through, I was just so happy that it was the last time I was going to have to go through this horrible, long waiting in line in the hot sun and then, you know, having the soldiers either look in your bags or whatever, you know. I mean, I just think that if I felt that way, just having only done it, you know, a very few times, that Palestinian people, it must just be such a burden to them to have to deal with that every day. But when I talked to him about how I found Palestinian people in general to be so warm and hospitable, and really most people, most Palestinians that I spoke to, talked about their wish for peace, that they really did not want to have, you know, a situation of conflict. They wanted things to be resolved. And that seemed to make a big difference when I talked about that. And when I talked about the closures and the these roadblocks and so on, I mean, you can't drive your car even between one town and another. You've got to, in our case, we took taxis, we got out, went past the roadblock, got another taxi. There was a couple of roadblocks that our group removed in a village in the north near Tulkarm. And those roadblocks were blocking access to the village's water and to their fields. They're olive groves, I believe. And so I think I try to talk about just how life becomes so burdensome if you constantly have to deal with all this kind of thing. And plus, my understanding is that it's affected a lot of businesses. Palestinian businesses have not been able to continue because the kind of conditions make it very hard to keep going in a business. If your supplies can't get to you and all your fresh vegetables or something and they all rot at a checkpoint because you can't get it through in time, you know, that kind of thing, then it's very clear that this is totally unjustified kind of intervention on the part of the Israelis.
You have been listening to an interview with Eileen Young, a Montrealer who traveled from the West Island to the West Bank to participate in the Freedom Summer Campaign. Eileen is a longtime social justice activist. She lives in St. Anne de Bellevue and is an artist. In June 2004, she traveled to Palestine with a group of older women who were all volunteers with the International Solidarity Movement's Freedom Summer 2004. Throughout the summer of 2004, the International Solidarity Movement brought together Palestinians, Israelis, and internationals on the ground in the occupied territories for the Freedom Summer Campaign. The campaign focused on building nonviolent civil resistance to confront the daily workings of the Israeli occupation. Freedom Summer 2004 focused on the internationally condemned and now illegal Israeli security fence, or to what is now commonly referred to as the apartheid wall. For more information about the International Solidarity Movement, visit them on the web at www.palsolidarity.org. That's palsolidarity.org. You can also visit them at www.ismcanada.org. That's www.ismcanada.org. This interview was recorded and produced for CKUT Radio in Montreal by Stéphane Christophe.